Have you ever heard of this one? End women's suffrage. You've never seen that tweet that's like, oh yeah, women are oppressed, and it's like, we should end women's suffrage, and it's like, yeah, end what gives you rights, okay. Never seen that one.
Oh yeah, people that think that means suffrage. That it means
suffering.
Yeah. Suffrage is a right to vote.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah. Where people, you're like, no, honey, that's not what that word means. We do not want to end women's suffrage.
Well,
Nate.
Yeah, I'm with Nate.
What? Didn't say we didn't nothing. Say.
Wow. You didn't hear it from me, but you did.
All right, we have a movie to talk about, folks.
The time where women's suffrage only lasted for, what, 16 years at that point?
Okay.
Did you just do that math?
Yes.
Why? Or when the movie came out, or when the movie takes place?
No, the movie takes place in 36. Yeah, movie came out in 81. It's like, whoa, you would have been way off.
Yeah. So this movie was 1981. 81. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, 16 years back, that's 1965.
Civil rights movement.
Yeah, civil rights.
But not women's suffrage. That
women's suffrage was 1919.
What amendment was it?
19th.
Yeah, that's probably right.
It's like that. That's about it. It's like, I feel like this is wrong. It's from Always Sunny. No. Like, I feel like this is wrong, but I don't know enough to art, too.
It's where Charlie's talking about garbage, and he's like, or I think, yeah, he burns the garbage. He's like, I burn the garbage, and it floats up into the sky where it turns into stars. And Max's like, that sounds wrong, but I don't know enough about stars to dispute it.
What's up?
Yeah.
I was right. 19th. The right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied.
Was it 1919 or 1920?
Because
if it was 1919, that's too many 19s. I feel like I would have actually remembered that.
Ooh, okay. So passed by Congress June 4th, 1919, and ratified on the 20th.
So it was so women's suffrage was going on in 1919. Mm-hmm.
But it didn't apply to female rats until 1920.
So Congress had passed it, but it wasn't implemented into law until 1920.
Yeah, so you were right.
And I was also right.
It's passed, yeah.
You were not really right.
I said 1920. I knew it was not.
Yeah. It's enforced. It's signed on. Well, Congress passes the bill and goes to law. My aunt wanted to listen to this podcast, too, and I was telling her, hey, I'm going to be doing a podcast with my girlfriend and her brother. And she's like, okay, send me the link. I'm like, sure. I don't know if she'll want to listen now. Sorry, Aunt Connie.
Did you send her the one to the Joker, or... We didn't do Joker. We did.
No, we did.
We did Joker with a.
Well, yeah. I told her about One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and she's like, "Oh yeah, your grandfather loved watching that movie," and she's like, "Yeah, I think I've seen that thousands of times," and I'm like, "I actually wouldn't be surprised knowing how our family operates."
Yeah, so. You guys all seem to pick one movie.
Fun fact about Jack Nicholson, which there's probably a lot of them, but
he has coronavirus.
No. He actually, so because I just wrote that paper about Leonard Skinner.
Invented coronavirus.
They went to open for the Rolling Stones in 1976.
Jack Nicholson or Leonard Skinner?
Well, I'm getting to it, okay. No, Leonard Skinner. And before they were like really nervous, so they were like drinking and like having a smoke, you know. It was the 70s.
As one does.
And they bumped into Jack Nicholson at this concert, and Jack Nicholson was like, hey, can I have a smoke with you guys? And so Jack Nicholson just lit up with Leonard Skinner.
I know a picture, because he's actually dressed in like a really nice suit, and he's got like a cigarette or maybe a joint, you don't know. And he's looking at the camera, and then you see band members in the back,
it
and
could
he's just
very well
looking
be that
at them like, hey, let me it tell you what's
be.
Up.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm Jack Nicholson.
Back in the if I could go back to any concert in history, it would have been that one. Leonard Skinner opening for the Rolling Stones.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
100%.
I have no idea what concert I would go back to. Beethoven, maybe. Mozart? I don't know.
Wow. Okay. Bradley?
Hey, I have taste. Class. That's why Bradley's dating me.
Yeah, that's why I'm dating you, because I thought you had class. Actually, I did.
Maybe she had class with you. And
no,
that's why
it's because she's God-fearing and loves the Lord, so that's why. That's the only reason.
Okay. Well,
otherwise, I would leave you in a heartbeat.
I was joking about my taste in music. Anywho.
Now insert a quip about her legs, her fat legs.
You know Chevy Chase? Well, your legs are Chubby Chase. What's up? Anyway, let's continue.
No, let's continue on what,
oh,
what,
her legs?
What concert? No.
Oh, concert.
Yeah, if you could go back to any concert in history.
Ooh, that's a...
And it could be a concert like you missed last weekend, but that'd be super lame.
I think I would go to see Def Leppard after their Hysteria album came out. I forget the name of the concert.
Was it the post-Hysteria concert?
Yeah, post-Hysteria.
Was it just Hysteria? because yeah. generally I feel like they just call it whatever the name of the album is.
Well, I could look that up too. But I was looking up for the Jack Nicholson picture where he's with Motley Crue. Or wait, not Motley Crue, Lynyrd Skynyrd. Why am I saying
maybe he has Motley a picture Crue. With Motley Crue
yeah,
as well.
Maybe he does.
Maybe Jack Nicholson just gets around.
Yeah, he gets around. He's one
I
of those
like
actors.
Motley Crue and Lynyrd Skynyrd are kind of
very
not
different, extremely different.
People you mix up easily.
Bradley, list three things that are different between Lynyrd Skynyrd and Motley Crue, other than their name and their band members.
Ooh, let's see. There was a crew between the Motley. There was Lynyrd before the Skynyrd.
No, you're
Lynyrd before the Skynyrd. It sounds like a documentary about Lynyrd Skynyrd. Lynyrd before the Skynyrd. Or sounds like a really weird, like, risque, like, horror movie.
Yeah, Lynyrd before the Skynyrd. Just think of the word Skynyrd. It really Skynyrd. Does sound kind of sinister, you know. Skynyrd.
Yeah, or just gross.
Yeah, just gross.
Skynyrd. Yeah, it sounds very similar to Skidmark. Yeah, Skynyrd Mark.
Yeah, if you have a boring imagination, maybe.
I do. I really do.
Wow, Skynyrd, yeah, sounds like Skidmark. Yeah. Am I right, guys?
Am I right?
Am I funny?
No, you're not.
All the 12-year-olds that listen won't really think that was a good
yeah,
one.
Yeah, all the one.
So, let's do a... Oh, I'm Nate.
I'm Karina.
I'm Bradley.
I'm Nate.
I'm Karina.
I'm Bradley.
Other way around, I'm Nate.
I'm Bradley.
I'm Karina.
Okay. So let's do plot before cast today. Let's shake things up a little bit.
Okay, so plot is Indiana Jones is an archaeology professor. He ends up going to Egypt where his rival is on a dig working for Nazis looking for...
Belloc.
Yeah, Belloc.
Or Belloc.
Sounds like Belloc. The Elvish word for friend.
Belloc. Yeah, little Lord of the Rings there.
So anyway, he goes to Egypt where Belloc, his arch rival, is working on trying to find the Ark of the Covenant from the Bible because the Nazis want it because it's supposed to be this source of great power and they're going to use it as a weapon potentially, but also because Hitler's obsessed with the occult. And so he goes there to try and stop it from falling into Nazi hands and has many adventures along the way.
Mm-hmm. Many adventures along the way pretty much just sums up Indiana Jones in general.
Well, yeah, because they're fun adventure movies. Like that's what they're supposed to be.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
There are many. Like Bradley and I were actually talking about that as we were watching it last night. Is that for how much death and violence there is? There's also a lot of.
It's quite comical.
Yeah, it's very comical, and like there's kind of.
It's lighthearted.
Yeah, it's very
sure.
very lighthearted, and
although
it's supposed to just be fun.
Although the second one is heavy-hearted, and you know where hum num shabai, and pulls out the heart.
Second one's pretty rough.
Yeah,
in my opinion,
yeah.
for a lot of reasons. actually, I was thinking about this movie, and I was like, if they made this movie today, if you throw in a little bit more language and a little bit more blood, I mean, this might be an R-rated movie. Honestly,
well, it was going to receive an R-rated rating. Because of one scene that they actually, so the last scene where they're opening the Ark, and Belloc and the Nazis surrounding him are, you know, bursting into fire and stuff, and the scene where they're melting.
I mean, like Niagara Falls over there, and that guy. I mean, it's graphic, even though it's obviously wax figurines.
Yeah,
I mean, whether
it's
wax figurines or CGI or whatever.
As a child, like I remember
graphic.
Watching it, and it was just really horrifying seeing that.
Yeah,
okay. And. It received a PG-13 rating because Spielberg had to add the CGI of fire in front of Belloc because he explodes. Like, it actually shows him exploding.
Oh, you see his head explode still. I thought it was
so
PG.
So, to receive a PG-13 rating or PG, I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure it was going to be an R rated.
It's PG. This might be before PG-13 existed.
Okay.
I don't know when PG-13 came around, but.
It might be because it was either just PG or rated R. So in order to get it down to a PG rating, he added the fire so it wasn't as evident that he was exploding. And then, you know, they said, okay, that's fine. Like, that's more
family friendly.
Family, yeah. Even though it's still...
I mean, and to be fair, that is the only scene in the movie that's that graphic. The rest of it is very comical. There's other ones that, no blood, no...
Well, but there's the guy that gets chopped up by the propeller. And you don't see him get chopped up, but you see the blood spray.
That's true, there is blood.
They make the innuendo of...
I was just thinking, a lot of it, a lot of the other fighting, though, is that it has that little bit of, like, the old-timey, like, it's a little sped up, it's a little...
In some parts, yeah.
Yeah, like, it, you know, there's not a... Aside from the propeller scene and the scene where people melt, there's not really a lot of blood in this movie, and it does all feel, like, very staged, like, choreographed fighting for the most part with, like, you know, you feel like you're watching a performance, which isn't bad, like, obviously they're good movies, but it definitely, like, aside from those couple of scenes, there's not a lot. So I don't know, maybe they took more stuff out if it was originally going to be an R rating.
Yeah, I don't know. I want to see the director's cut.
Right?
You know?
Well, I think with the scene, like, fight scenes, typically they are a lot slower. And then you get to the 80s where it starts speeding up. I mean, in the case of, you know, George Lucas, he took a part of this film and he was responsible for actually writing the story and a lot of the fight sequences, so he's trying to speed things up. And he also mentions this in his works in Star Wars. You know, Empire Strikes Back comes a year before this film does, and, you know, it's also Harrison Ford, and he was talking about how he really wants the choreography of fight scenes to be sped up so it doesn't feel as fake. So yes, it's obviously fake because you don't want your actors actually punching each other, but, you know, you have to work with what you've got.
The fighting's great, though. I mean, it's the fighting fun. In this, it is fun. And I mean, it's this, like, all these, like, dramatic, like, haymakers. And, you know, I mean, it's all, like, obviously very, very choreographed. But that's, like, that's what it is. It's like comic book action fighting, you know? It's great.
It's very much, the whole thing is designed to be a very feel-good.
Swashbuckling.
Yeah,
movie,
very,
really.
Swashbuckling's a good word for it. It is very swashbuckling in its own way. And...
Well,
yeah,
particularly,
like,
the scene where they're running away from the Arabs chasing Indy and Marion, you know, the sequence where they're first attacking them, and it's like, Marion, duck! And then it's a very, you know, slow moment till after he punches them, and then, you know, where they're swinging the sword, and then, you know, he gets out of the way, and then he still stabs him, like, 3 seconds later.
Yeah,
but it's still funny.
Yeah, like, a lot of hijinks within the... fighting where just, like, comical errors of, like you're saying, you know, people stabbing people that are on their own side or making dumb mistakes that people would probably not
or
make
the
in
scene
real life.
Where the guy's got the super big sword and he's swinging it all around and then he just you know, pulls a one-hand Luke and just knocks him down. But then they're, you know, the people surrounding him, they don't, you know, go to his aid, or, you know, they take the guy's big sword and are waving it around like, I got it.
Yeah,
there's so many aimless crowds in this movie. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, like, just like aimless Arabs, you know?
Wow.
Aimless Arabs.
Hey, if you want to talk about racist, how about the fact that they had John Rhys Davies play an Arab when they could have gotten... Listen, I like John Rhys Davies.
I do too,
He's awesome. He's a great guy. He's a funny actor. Indy, you know? Like, he's good. Like, it's hard not to like
him.
He's
great,
But... I mean, if you're going to have an Arab character, I mean, you have British people playing the British parts, you have Americans playing the American parts, it's not that hard to find an Arab actor.
This is at a point, you know, when the, whatever it was called, like, the Scramble for Africa would have been going on.
In 19...
Race for Africa. It would have, well, I mean,
Scramble
it would be going
for Africa is taking place,
But at that point, when I guess I shouldn't say it's taking place, but,
imperialism,
like, it had happened,
has
and
been dying out.
People had not left yet. And so there would be a lot of...
No, not necessarily. You see a lot of that happening after World War II, but even after World War I, Scramble for Africa is well done.
I guess I didn't mean that it was still going on, but, like, the Europeans are definitely not out of Africa yet. So, like, I guess you could make the argument that, like, they wanted somebody who was going to feel more like someone who had grown up in a very...
Are we talking
European.
In the context of the movie or in the context of when the movie was made?
Because when the movie was
the
made is
of,
the 80s.
No. In the context of when the movie takes place. Of, like,
So you think they chose American actor for that reason? I'm pretty sure he's doing an Arab accent. I mean, I guess if you grew up there,
he's
you'd have
doing
an
like kind of a British accent too. Though. Who knows? What he's doing. I don't really know what it is. I don't know. I'm just saying maybe they wanted it to have more of a like a European, like Caucasian feel because he it would have been Egypt at a time when people from Europe were still
that sounds like
dominating
something
that
sounds like something Steven Spielberg would say in a press conference after the movie came
maybe.
Out. Like,
I don't know.
Wait, yeah, this is why we did that. Realism.
Well, no, actually, there are hints of him, staying true to the actual historical context of the Ark in the Bible, which Karina and I were.
If you're going to put candy in your mouth.
No, it's
or
a retainer.
Oh, retainer.
But it's making him lisp.
Oh, yeah,
now.
You do
it.
You
is
totally
it
have
lisp?
A lisp now.
Yeah.
I thought you put a piece of
you
candy
need
in
to
your
take
mouth.
It out.
Just want to wear my retainer, Mom.
Yeah, don't wear that. It makes it you a lot harder to understand.
And a lot funnier to understand as well.
Although he's the one that hears it. You don't hear anything.
Well, obviously,
on the
she can hear
audio.
It. She's giving you a weird look.
No, but I'm saying I can hear it. Just in here, and
guess
I
what? If
it's...
I can hear it, everyone who listens to the podcast is.
I
be
want
able to
them.
Hear it.
I could be the guy. Oh, did you hear that guy with the lisp? He's so
it's
funny. Kind
of hot.
He's so funny. He's so sexy.
Okay. Anyway, don't wear the retainer. I know you're anxious to put it on, but you're gonna have to wait.
Gotta straighten my teeth up.
They're not crooked. Just wait until afterwards. Anyway,
so
what
about
what
the two?
You...
So we talked about Sala a little bit. What about the two villains in this movie? You have Major Arnold Tot, however you say that in German. And then you have Belloc, of course, the French guy. Did you guys dig these as villains in this iconic movie? Did you think that they were villains that lived up to, that fit in such an iconic movie? Were they good villains?
Yeah, I think so. Just in the portrayal of, the Nazis, the guy who's doesn't want to do any of the dirty work, but has his henchmen do, Nazi henchmen. What was the German officer's name?
Belloc.
No, he
Belloc
was the French archaeologist.
Oh, German officer. I guess Tote. I don't know. It's
Tote.
T-O-H-T.
Because there's a scene where...
Wait, no. I think I'm looking at the wrong...
You might be looking at the wrong thing.
I totally am. Yeah. It's Dietrich, I think.
Dietrich? Okay, that sounds very German. Dietrich
German.
Bonhoeffer, but
if you
he's...
Think, if you think that's
good
German,
guy
the name of the actor...
History.
Is Wolf Collar.
Wolf Collar.
That is also very German.
Yeah, that is German. Very authentic. Spielberg, he knows.
He got a German to play the German guy.
But he did not get an Egyptian to play the Egyptian guy.
There's a scene in particular, so after the plane explodes, there's a viewing tower where he says, I demand that I have protection at all costs, and then there's a viewing tower that explodes, and he runs away because he's scared. I think that's just adds to the comedy and the portrayal of it. He's supposed to be Hitler's representative throughout the dig, and he thinks that he's higher than everybody else just because he's Hitler's right hand man and in the job.
He is because of that, I guess.
Yeah. But thinking that he's better than everybody else. And then I like the competition between Belloc and Indy, how they could be interchangeable, like if Indiana Jones is like one step away from being a villain. And there's the scene where they meet in the bar and he says, you and I aren't so different, our methods are very similar. It's like we would kill to get our hands on the Ark. And there
classic,
are scenes,
which is a classic like partway through the movie moment or close to the end movie moment where the villain meets a hero and you have this, oh, you and I are well, we're really the same
two
person.
Clearly,
the same
in
coin.
Seen in Austin Powers, obviously. Even though, what is that? Mike Myers, he plays Dr. Evil in Austin Powers, so
Mike
they
Myers
are
the
same.
Doctor. Oh.
I'm pretty sure. I can check to validate.
Did they make?
But
his
they
nose
are
bigger?
The same. Yeah, they put like makeup.
I can
on.
See that.
Okay.
So.
No, I like both. I mean. For me, it's kind of hard because I don't know if you take the German guy, Dietrich, for example, he's a very like tropish, like stereotypical, like, oh, you've got your German guy with the small glasses and he has like the kind of high pitched voice and whatever. But I don't know if that was really a trope yet. It is Mike Myers.
Yeah. Mike Myers plays Dr. Evil and Austin Powers. Yeah, baby. Anyway.
But I like Belloc too, because there is more of a personal, it feels like he has more of a personal connection to, like, all, yeah, really,
they
a
have the same interest, which drives both of them, yes, to the arc.
Well, they have two of the same interests. Mm-hmm. They have both Marion and pursuit of, you know, finding lost artifacts or whatever. So mm-hmm. I don't know, I think that makes him a good villain as well.
Yeah,
a little more personable.
They definitely both feel like they were well written to match the type of story, because like we said, the story is kind of swashbuckling and just fun and kind of over the top, and both of the villains feel that way too. Like you said, they are a little tropish, or a little, you know, they feel stereotypical in a way. And even if that wasn't as much of a stereotype for those things at that point in time, they do just feel like, not like a, there was, how do I say this? Like that there wasn't a lot of thought put into them in some ways, that they're just built to be these kind of two-dimensional almost villains. They work really well in the story, so in that way they're well thought, but just that they aren't like deep characters. They aren't, unlike what you get with like Indiana Jones, who has a little bit more, you know, three-dimensional aspects his personality. I'm just saying, like, you see in other movies where they spend a lot more time like giving you, like, they want you to understand the villain, and there's a lot more backstory, and there's a lot more like, what's their motivation, and, you know, giving them all these nuances and stuff, and these guys aren't like that. They're just very like, yep, these are the bad guys, because, you know, one's a Nazi, and like kind of that in and of itself in is still almost just a trope, just to be like, to have somebody be a Nazi is just kind of its own thing. Like, he's just a Nazi. He doesn't really have to have any more personality beyond that. Like, literally everybody's just going to take that at face value and be like, all right, he's terrible and he's the worst. And so that's all you need for that guy. And then, yeah, a little bit more personal element with Belloc. But I think that they work really well in the story because they're just...
With Belloc, what I think's interesting now is he's French, and the French aren't allies with Germany at all, but this is 3 years prior to when World War II. 36, 37.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it said 36. And I think this just demonstrates that Belloc is willing to sell his soul for anything, you know, to get his hands on the artifact, because he describes it in the opening scene where he takes the idol that Indy claimed, because he knows and he can communicate with the indigenous people down in South America. Like, he knows it. So I think he's just willing to sell to the highest bidder for whatever he can get his hands on, in all honesty. So I think that's the biggest difference between him and Indiana Jones.
Well, it definitely is, but they still both have the same drive.
Yeah.
Yeah, they definitely both have the same drive and the same willingness to kind of do whatever it takes to get their hands on an item. The only difference is
Belloc is kind of a smug French asshole.
Well, I was going to say, the difference being that, like, Belloc is interested in
So is Harrison Ford. Yeah. Not French, but, you know, he's a smug ass.
But like, it's expected because he's American.
Yeah, well, yeah, they have, like, similar personality traits and stuff, too. What I'm saying is, like, their only real difference, like, real difference, is that Belloc is in the archaeological game for personal gain, and Indy's there because he wants to put stuff in a museum for people to learn. Because
he's the good guy.
But that's what I'm saying, like, that's really their only major difference. Like you said, they're both, like, arrogant, and they both are willing to kill for things, and they both have very unorthodox...
I think Indiana Jones just likes the thrill of it too.
There may be that element, although he is a professor of archaeology, so he enjoys.
He is, but the beginning of this movie, after he gets back from the, you know, first scene within the cave and the boulder and all that with the idol, and he gets back and he's talking about, he's like, I had it in my hands, you know, like he loves the thrill of treasure hunting.
Yeah, I would say it's both.
He's still passionate about archaeology and all of the boring details about it. But he teaches a class on it, you know, but I think it's more than that. I mean, another great example is when he's in during the truck convoy chase, attack scene, fight scene, whatever. One of the moments in there where he finally gets control of the truck and like kicks the final guy out of the truck or whatever. And then he's kind of got some blood on his face and he's driving and he just kind of grins like, oh yeah. Like he loves this.
Oh yeah.
This is what gets his like, I mean, he gets a boner for action. He loves it.
I mean, yeah, that's definitely true. Like, that is, and that is part of his, you know, his persona is that he's a very, you know, like, this is what he lives for.
Killing Nazis.
But yeah, there's still not many big differences between him and Belloc, other than kind of what their end goal is for what they're going to do with an artifact once they get it.
Sure.
Is their primary difference, and that's it.
So what about, I really want to know how you guys feel about Marion Ravenwood too. I want to know.
I like her.
You like her.
I like her. I think she's a fun, like, I think that I like her because
you are like her.
Thanks. You told me I looked like her the other day.
A little.
Well, yeah, a little bit. A little bit.
Anyway, so I think that I like her because she has a nice balance of being like, she's tough and she's kind of like one of the boys, but at the same time she also has like the side of like, you know, why didn't you come get me? And like, I think, I don't know, I like that there's a balance of like, she wants to be really tough and like strong, but at the same time she like is very like,
it's like, hey, okay, I'm why a do damsel I have
to,
in distress.
Yeah, kind of like she wants to help play me. Into that a little bit and be like, hello, like, well, yes, I can take care of myself, but I would like you to take care of me for me,
that's
please.
A big difference between, and I don't want to focus on the second film though.
I don't want you to either.
Yeah. I asked for you to focus on the first film. But the second film, you know, Spielberg casts a woman who's blonde and she's very damsel in distress and gravitates towards that more instead of the
And she's
rough
not
and
an
tough
interesting
tomboy.
Character.
Oh, she's so bad.
But then she proves to be like, oh, I can kind of handle it. You know, she's got sort of a tough side to her. So he kind of flipped the coin on that with the approach.
Yeah, but
I
she's not interesting at all. Like, Marion is funny and like, she's entertaining to watch. Like, you know, she's kind of like, she's always ready to fight somebody, but she's also like,
she's spunky.
She's very spunky, but she's also at the same time, like, she's little and she's like, she can win some things, but there's, like, you kind of understand, she's, like, she kind of always has the underhand, but you kind of like her for that. She's, like, you know, like, when Indy's trying to get her out of the fight, and, like, he pushes her away, and she's, like, you see in the background, she, like, picks up a frying pan, and, like, comes back to this guy, and she's not the focus of the scene, so you don't ever really see what happens, but she's, like, now I'm coming back.
No, there's quite a few, like, frying pan KOs in this movie. Like, rivals Tangled for the amount of frying pan KOs.
Frying pans, who knew, right?
No, I think she's really good, too. I mean, she's spunky, she's energetic, she's kind of tomboyish in a way, in that sense. Like, she wants to throw a fist at someone. She wants to, you know, put
she's
down
not 100, afraid.
100 shots of liquor, and she won't have a problem
but
with it.
But at the same time, then she has that moment of, like, so, you know, she's in the tent with Belloc, and she's trying to work on, like, pretending to get drunk so she can get away. And then when Talk, or whatever the guy's name is, comes in,
then
she, like, runs back over to Belloc and, like, hides.
Yeah,
there's a very big difference. You just pointed something out, I realized. Realizing the scene where she's just hammering shots after shots after shots, and then the scene where she's getting drunk, like, I actually never realized she's pretending because she can handle her liquor.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know that
well,
she
and
can.
Well, and I think that's part of why, I mean, like, I think that's part of why the way that it they show you what they show you. I mean, part of it is to, like, just to show you her character, like, or not her character, but, like, her personality of, like, you know, and just who she is. Like, she's going to drink other people
she's
under
a wild
the table.
Card.
Like, she's just wild.
She's just wild, yeah.
But then, yeah, so that way when you get to
no,
that
it's a callback.
Scene, though,
yeah, it's setting
yeah,
it up
where you're
sure.
like, oh, yeah, she's clearly faking it because, you know, she's, because you see it, too, in little parts of the scene where she's, like, drinking and then she's, like, ah, and, like, then she, like,
she grabs the knife.
Well, no. Before that, where she, like, looks, like, he's not looking at her or something, and she, like, drops the facade, and she's just kind of like, hey, are we done with this yet? And then he looks back at her, and she's like, ah, and, like, brings her smile and, like, fake drunk back. So it's, like, you see that she's like, okay, hurry up and get drunk. Hurry up and get drunk so I can't get out of here. Like,
yeah, and that just shows you how weak the French are, too.
There you go.
She got out drunk, but...
they're just slaves to lust.
Yes, exactly.
But
and
anyway.
White flags, too.
Sorry, you can go back to what you were saying. I was just
forced that joke in there.
I was just
we
bringing,
have to.
Yeah,
every time
talking.
We talk about the French, we surrender.
I just wanted to bring up, like, the point of her, like, you know, she wants to be tough and, like, out, you know, get away from this guy. But then as soon as somebody else threatens her, she's running back to him to be
I
never mind. So
I would almost argue she's probably the most. It's hard to say this because Harrison Ford is in this movie and Indiana Jones is such a good character, but she's really a good character, I think. I mean, I don't know if I'd say she's better than Indiana Jones, but in some ways I think she is. I think she's more interesting in some ways, really.
Yeah, she's definitely a really good complementary female figure for
yeah, and it's the not way like that they built just
Indiana Jones
sitting there and doing nothing.
Well, yeah, she actually like has a
significant
one.
Part. Yeah, and I think I'd rather have, you know, a complimentary character actually do something and contribute to the story instead
of just sitting there complaining about the, like,
you find out like her dad mentored Indiana Jones at the University of Chicago, mm-hmm. and you know, he taught her everything that Indiana knows, so they both have, you know, a knowledge of what they're looking for and the medallion that she has. So she does have a very significant
part in the story. You get that she's not just a spunky, like, spitfire kind of person. She's also very intelligent, and she understands the scope of what Indiana is looking for and why it's important, and she knows a lot of the historical background and things like that. So she is more than just like somebody to be, you know, comedic or entertaining to watch. Like, she's also intelligent, but definitely like more interesting than, like, we're talking about the girl in the second one, who's pretty much just there to be like whiny eye candy. And she's not, and it's like
Steven Spielberg ended up marrying.
There you go. See?
Did he really?
Yes, he did. He really did. I'm not making this stuff up. You can watch it. Yeah.
They
didn't want to hear that.
It's all coming together now. He's gonna sleep with that one.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Fine. I'll get you a part.
Where'd you get the part?
But yeah, like,
don't ask, don't
she's
tell.
She's definitely the best female character in any of the Indiana Jones movies. Like, I like that they brought her back in the fourth one.
Kingdom of the Temple Skull.
Yeah, I guess so, but it's kind of like a not very good bringing back.
I mean, like, obviously,
of course, nothing in that movie was
that movie's
good
not
either,
good.
So.
That movie's not good. So, like,
what? You found me Shia LaBeouf didn't, you know, steal the screen on that?
No, not really. Harrison Ford is still the person stealing the show. But, no, I mean, that movie is
just
awful.
Slower.
But I did like that she was back. Because, I mean, of the women in the Indiana Jones movie, she is the one to bring back. Like, if you are going to make one of them have a reappearance.
Well, it's kind of hard to with the third film, considering she fell into an endless abyss.
That is true.
Can't bring her back.
That is true. Yeah. I'm just saying, but like...
Hey, as Ghost.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, at least they brought her back instead of trying to introduce a new female, like, love interest for Indy somehow.
Yeah,
or bringing
that.
Back, you know, somebody else that you're like, really not interested in this person. So... I don't know. I like her. Obviously, the fourth movie's nowhere near as good as any of the others.
I think they also have, between Indy and Marion, I think they have pretty good chemistry, too, for being, like, a... Especially, you know, once again, compared to the chick in the second one. But we keep saying chick because I don't even know what her name is. You know, I actually think that they have a pretty good, like, relationship in this movie. I mean, like, in the past, he did something to break her heart or whatever, used her or something, whatever that was. You know, they're kind of vague about mm-hmm. that. You know, they have some history, some love wounds.
History.
But I think
archaeology. Sorry.
Don't make me mute you again. But I think the relationship works. I like it.
Yeah.
It's good.
Well, and I would say that definitely, like, I mean, I don't know how they felt about each other as people, like Harrison Ford and whatever her name is, but...
Her name's Willie Scott, and the woman in the second one.
No, not her. I was talking about...
Her name's Willie?
Yeah.
In real life or in the movie?
Real life.
Oh, that poor
girl. Or no, wait, hold up. No, okay, it's Willie in the movie.
Oh.
Her name's Kate Capshaw.
Okay, that's better.
Okay.
I was going to say, Willie's a pretty bad name.
Yeah.
Anyway, so whatever the gal who plays Marion, what's her name? Do you have the cast?
Oh, yeah, it's Karen Allen.
Okay, so I feel like I don't know how they felt about each other, like, in real life, but definitely that the chemistry between them does not feel forced at all or scripted. Like, you feel like they are genuinely, like, hitting it off well as, you know, an acting duo versus whatever her name is, Kate. Something that feels super like.
You think there's maybe a little off-screen action going on between Harrison Ford and Karen Allen?
Maybe.
Well, there was with Carrie Fisher, so
yeah, there definitely was with Carrie Fisher. Yeah,
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, obviously Harrison Ford was
it's Harrison Ford,
the biggest star at
this
time.
You want to say something? Huh? Yeah.
Hey, young Harrison Ford could get it.
Uh-huh.
Young Harrison Ford could
get
it.
Get what?
Yeah, what?
Whatever.
What
he
is
wanted.
He getting after?
Whatever.
You
want to
say? I'm right here.
Yeah. Hey, honey. Yeah.
Yeah.
Listen, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Stop being insecure if you just looked more like Harrison Ford.
Yeah. Because I can control.
So there's a lot of, obviously a lot of iconic like scenes and stuff in this movie. What's the best, I don't know, best or most iconic or your favorite of like all of the very iconic parts from this film?
I think the most iconic would more than likely be the opening scene,
yeah,
with the idol and the boulder.
Yeah, for sure.
You think Indiana Jones. I mean, and it's been replicated in other movies, you know, like Chicken Little, if you go on the Indiana Jones ride.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a huge Disney part of the
Not really
Indiana
a replication,
Jones.
But...
No, oh, not replicate. Sorry. It's
like
not,
an adaptation.
Obviously, yeah,
adaptation. Yeah.
Well, in Chicken Little, they have, a featured movie, and it's Indiana Jones, and that's the scene that they show. And the huge, I forget what they use in Chicken Little, but, you know, he knocks down, I think, this big church bell or something like that, and it's rolling throughout the town, and it breaks through the movie theater right as the boulder's gonna come through the screen, so.
And yeah, I guess that wasn't a great question, because obviously it's the boulder, but I was just thinking, like, there's a lot of, when I was watching this movie, because I haven't seen this movie for a couple of years, and watching it again, like, every time, every scene is memorable. I mean, you have that whole scene, and then you have the scenes in the desert, and, you know, like, when they're happening, you remember everything that's happened, you know, like, the part with the staff is memorable, and the part where he knocks over the statues and breaks down the wall is memorable, and then you have the part where they fight on top of the plane, and, like, as these scenes are building up, like, oh, yeah, I remember this scene, I love this scene, you know, and the convoy scene, and, I mean, every scene is memorable, every scene is iconic, that's what I love about
it. Which... is an indication of a really, really good movie. If you don't have
almost every scene.
Well, and
movie,
if you don't
like
have
that.
Portions of it that you're like, oh yeah, I'd forgotten about this. Like,
or it's kind of the parts of movies, which there are a lot of movies that have parts like this, where you're watching this movie with this for the second time, and you get to the part of the movie where you're like, all right, I'm gonna go get something to eat, you know?
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah,
it's
this scene, I got 5 minutes.
I'm gonna check my phone,
yeah.
Like, where you're kind of, you have one eye on the TV, kind of waiting for it to get to the
next
part
that
you like. There
is no scene like that in this movie.
No,
there really isn't. There's a couple of dry patches.
It does slow
down
in a couple of parts, but even then, like, you know, I'm thinking, like, it slows down a little when they go to talk to the guy who's interpreting the medallion.
Sure.
But even then, it ends with the bad dates,
And it's suspenseful,
because
you're finding out, like, the seriousness. And what I love about the film is, and I told you about this yesterday, is how it was actually staying pretty true to biblical texts and biblical history. And we were talking about, like, the Ark, how Indy and Sala never actually touched the Ark, and how biblically... like, if you touch the Ark, or if you laid eyes upon the Ark, and that was the one thing we noticed, like... The Ark was always covered when it was in the temple, and you weren't supposed to lay your eyes on it, but we were saying how you need to see the Ark because otherwise you don't really have a really good film. But the first time it's touched is when they're actually, you know, taking the top off and opening the contents of the Ark, and then all the Germans
dies,
you know, and they're having that reverence, which is very interesting. I don't know the belief of George Lucas or... You know, but he respects the Jewish history of the Ark of the Covenant.
Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know.
It might be a stretch. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't.
It might be. I mean, I don't know if I would go so far as to say that he, like, was really respectful of it and went out of his, maybe...
Or maybe he's just aware of it.
Yeah, but I mean, it is interesting that when you know the biblical background of how the Ark was supposed to be handled, and then you watch a movie that you're like, actually, they're doing a lot of this the way that it was actually supposed to be done. Mm-hmm. So that is interesting. And even then, like, a lot of times they have it covered, like, it's in a box or it's covered with something. And so, you know, maybe it was just him... That's just how he wrote it, and it just happened
to be
that way.
Well, it shows, like, how skeptical Indy is prior, and he's like... Didn't you go to Sunday school? Don't you know this? And he's like, oh, I don't believe in all the hocus pocus, but everyone's warning him, like, this isn't something that was intended for man's eye to see. Like, this is not of this world, and talking about, like, the power behind it. And then at the end of the scene where they open it, you know, he's warning Mary to close his eyes because he knows he's not supposed to be witnessing the power that's in the Ark that's being released. So...
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much is supposed to be read into it because it is just an action movie, but it is interesting, if nothing else, just to note that there is a lot of, you know, accuracy. And so whether or not that was intentional, who knows? But it is interesting.
I think at the end of the day, when they decided to use, you know, the Ark, it's like, well, if you're going to use the Ark, you don't want to look like a bunch of jabronis. So obviously you've got to go to the original text and you got to at least get the main things right.
You have to make it authentic.
Right.
You can't just be like, hey, here's a hinky dinky Ark.
Yeah.
Yeah. Know? Although, you know, you say that you'd want to go to the original text and make sure that you're being authentic to how people that know about this would think of it, but you don't see that with everything. I mean, you think about the Noah movie and stuff like that, where they just were completely like, we're gonna make up our own stuff, we're just gonna take this concept. And so
between Steven Spielberg and other directors,
or
producers,
Ridley Scott or something, who did that?
I don't remember who made that.
Anyway, my point is just that, like, there have been other movies based on, like, biblical people or events.
Well, that's the
or
thing. This isn't based on
biblical. No, it's not biblical
at all. No.
It has
a
biblical artifact.
I know. Yeah. I know. But even more so, like, it's not even based on a biblical story, but they're still, like, they obviously, if what you're saying is true, that, like, they went and did their research and figured it out.
Well, I think that's
the
difference between a good director and a bad one.
Probably. I don't know. I'm just saying, like, it's not. I wouldn't
say it's
a given.
How close do they stick to the Bible?
Yes, they have to stick exactly to the Bible, otherwise it's wrong.
So where does Christopher Nolan fit into that?
Just like, oh no, absolutely.
Stanley
not.
Kubrick.
But at, like, staying true to what is actually, like, you see a bunch of films that are, like, based on true events or based on actual stories, and it's like, how close to the story did you actually stay to?
Because that's what I'm saying is, like, makes it even more interesting. It's like, because it's not based on an actual story, it is just an adventure movie, and they decided to include something that exists in the Bible. Like, that would have been even more room, I think, for them to, if they'd wanted to be like, we're just going to take this concept of, like, the Ark being something of power, and then we're going to do whatever we want, because it's not,
like,
based on a real story. So
the Lost City and, you know, the Ark, because it biblically, the Ark of the Covenant isn't mentioned after the temple is sacked. You don't know its whereabouts, and then they're making it.
Well, yeah, obviously they had
to
give them some kind of a map to follow, but I don't know. It's probably not that important at the end of the day, and it maybe didn't get as much thought as we think it did, but it's.
Yeah, but they're taking.
They probably gave it less thought than we've given it in the past.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's what I'm saying, is, like, they may not have given it that much thought. So
top men are taking care of it, though.
I think what the important part is that Steven Spielberg was involved, and that they let, and that George Lucas wrote the script. And created the characters, and that's why those are both memorable and great. But at the end of the day, you have a second set of eyes come in here and actually take care of.
So you don't end up with, like, Howard the Duck.
So you just don't end up with complete and utter garbage, because
that's what I'm saying.
George Lucas sometimes makes complete and utter garbage when he's given freedom.
Well, he started losing his talent after the third Star Wars. It started going downhill. Although I will say that the prequels that are made of Star Wars are way better than the newest installments of the film. So I will defend Lucas there.
They bounced a little bit, but I don't want to start a Star Wars conversation.
That is for a very
different
podcast.
Different story.
There's a lot to unpack.
And I especially don't want to start a conversation.
The fourth Indiana Jones? No, let's not.
No, definitely not either. No.
They're making a fifth one. Oh my gosh.
They are making a fifth one. No.
Stop.
With Harrison Ford? But that doesn't really, at this point.
Stop.
I mean,
no, I meant that more as, like, I'm surprised
how
he's
old
making
is
another
Harrison
one.
Ford
because
now.
I felt like the
Let's
fourth.
Let's wager. I'm going to say 79.
I was going to say, I'm going to say 77.
Yeah, I'm going to say mid-70s.
77 is what I'm going to say. 73.
I'm going to 73.
I think he's older
than that. He's older. I think he's older than 73, but 77.
I'm going with 77.
I got it. Right
73. Now. You have it.
He was born in 1942. He is 77.
Oh, 77. Look at me go!
Which is really cool to think about, because he was born, like, right on the cusp of, or I guess the end of the back of World War II. That's pretty interesting, because he does, you know, because Indiana Jones takes place in World War II, so that's kind of cool. Because he was actually alive close to when the events of this movie take place, so that's pretty interesting.
Yeah. I'm just surprised they're making a fifth one, because I definitely felt like the fourth one, they set it up to kind of be like, oh, he's passing the torch.
That's like right in the middle, actually, because World War II ended 45.
Wait, what year did you say he was born?
39. 42.
He's born in 42.
Oh, yeah. So that's not right in the midst of it.
Dude, thank God they did not do the passing the torch thing with Shia LaBeouf. We did not need a Shia LaBeouf.
No, 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 no. He almost did it where, you know, he picks up the hat. Oh, the hat thing at the end of the movie, yeah. What are you doing?
Oh, man. God sent
that. Yeah, I guess I shouldn't say like a passing the torch. But I thought that what they were doing with the fourth one was like closing the story, that it was over, that it was done, that they were like, okay, he's,
why
you know,
make it over they were doing when you could third just one too. Keep beating the dead horse until it quits.
But then that really felt like it with the fourth one, because it was like, hey, he's old now, he can't really, like, he even talks about like this is not like something he does anymore. He gets married, like he settles, he's kind of, you like, you get the feeling he's just gonna settle down and enjoy the rest of his life with like,
they,
you know,
always
his first
do that,
love
though, and then they figure, hey, I got a great idea.
I mean,
let's take something
Harrison
we love
Ford.
And cherish and ruin it some more.
I love Harrison Ford, but I cannot believe he agreed to do it.
Yeah, I don't know. I
he
mean,
he loved the role, though.
Steven
Spielberg was one of his favorites.
Yeah, and I get that, but, like, he's old. Like, he's not going to be able to do a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's not going to be Indiana Jones running around doing
it's not.
Stuff.
Like,
it's going to be old Indiana Jones in a wheelchair with some other kid running around doing fun stuff going.
Yeah, like, that's what I'm trying to figure out. I don't know how it's going to, like... Like, I get if he loved the role, like, yes, if it was his favorite role, like, that's fine, that's great. I totally understand why this would be a role you would love to play. But I feel like he would be reasonable enough that he would be like, well, I'm 77. Maybe I, you know, the swashbuckling action hero isn't the role for me anymore. Kind of like where we're getting to with Tom Cruise, where it's like, okay, buddy, you're starting to get to the point where, like, you can't really do this anymore. So maybe
he'll start taking the Alec Baldwin role soon, where he's like, He's in action movies, but he's not doing anything at all. Like,
and
they need
like
a stunt man for him to walk across the room.
And, like, even with the last Indiana Jones movie, the fourth one, like, Harrison Ford didn't do a ton of, like, you could tell, like, they had to way scale back what he, you know, what he did action-wise compared to the first three, because it's, like, he's old.
And filling the gaps with CGI.
Yeah, he's old. Like, he can't do that kind of stuff anymore. And, like, that's fine. People age, but he...
To me, it's not so much about that. To me, what I don't like is that they just can't let a classic be a classic. They have to grab for the bills. They have to grab for the money and try to capitalize on something that, oh, we haven't made an addition to this franchise in 15 years, so better bring that back, you know?
Honestly. Yeah. Which,
get ready for Jaws 15.
They won't. What? Jaws 15? They haven't.
Oh, I'm talking about Back to the Future Part 2. Where
Dude, what are you talking
they're
about?
Talking about like the so Spielberg makes fun of his own filming because he directs the Back to the Future films and he did Jaws, and he makes a joke that in 2015 there'd be 17 Jaws movies.
Okay.
So like how they just keep remaking films.
Okay.
I didn't realize anybody watched Back to the Future Part 2, so
I actually enjoy that one. That's not
really
a bad one.
Okay.
I like that one better than the third one. The third one where he goes.
You've seen all three of them.
Yeah.
The third one's terrible.
The third
Don't
one's
watch
awful.
The third
Didn't they
one.
Make them at the same time or?
Oh no no
close
no.
Close to each other.
So the first one's 85. The second one.
No, not
is...
that they came out at the same time. I thought they filmed the second two at the same time.
Mm-mm. No.
Okay.
So they did it all different years: 85, 87, and I think 90.
No, I'm
or
not
when
talking
they did
about
filming.
When. Oh, okay. I've got.
I'm
not
talking about
talking when they
about,
released
no,
it. I thought they filmed the second two.
Well, that works in some cases. They filmed Lord of the Rings
all
at the same
one.
Time
yeah.
before they even released the first one. So.
Oh, I know, I know. I'm not criticizing that necessarily. I was just saying I thought that they had done that with Back to the Future, that they had filmed two and three at this, like, back to back, and then they just released them in different years. That's what I thought had happened, but I'm.
Oh, I was a little off on the second one. It was 89.
Anyway, I don't remember what we were talking about. Good. Oh, we were talking about Harrison Ford.
Getting
anyway.
Old.
What a nub.
I'm just surprised he agreed to do it.
Yeah.
Because he was, I mean, especially being the guy that wanted to kill Han Solo off after the first, he thought Han Solo should die.
Yeah, so after he came back for the second role, he was really asking George to just kill him off.
Yeah. He thought Han Solo should die. So I'm surprised then that same person would also be like, yeah, but at 77, I will go ahead and decide to take on the fifth Indiana Jones movie.
Well, you know, Harrison Ford needs money.
Yeah, because it clearly doesn't have enough from Star Wars or Indiana Jones.
Or all of the other movies
Or Blade Runner.
Blade Runner.
Yeah.
And well, and he made a handful of other like movies that are pretty famous too, like mm-hmm. The Fugitive and stuff like that. That he had a pretty good, I mean, once Star Wars really kicked off his career, he had a pretty good go of it for then the next 15 years.
Was he in American Graffiti?
Yes, that was actually one of his beginning films, and then he started working with George Lucas more, and George Lucas actually didn't want to cast him for Han Solo. What he had him do was when he was auditioning for other actors and actresses, he would help them with their lines, and then I forget the actor's name. Someone else was going to be Han Solo. Wait, I forget the actor's name.
Sean Connery.
Sean Connery.
Han Solo with a Scottish accent.
I know Tom Selleck was supposed to be Indiana Jones. They went to him before they went to...
Gross.
Yeah.
Tom Selleck is gross, and I don't like his acting.
That would change the entire movie. Even if the script was identical, if you put Tom Selleck in instead, it would just change it.
Tom Selleck doesn't...
Kurt Russell was supposed to be Han Solo.
Tom Selleck...
He got to one of the last auditions. Like, he got to the last phases of it. And then George Lucas settled on Harrison Ford because of the chemistry that he had, and, like, he just did such an exceptional job.
I like Kurt Russell, but Kurt Russell is not
work. No. Also, can we go back to the Tom Selleck as Indiana Jones thing? Because Tom Selleck does not have the personality for that at all.
I don't know. It's kind of weird.
Because that's what you're saying. Like, even if the script was identical, like, Tom Selleck would not bring, like, it would feel weird having him be the person that was...
Well, we say that because we know, because Indiana Jones is Harrison Ford.
But also having seen Tom Selleck act in things, there, it's like, Tom Selleck doesn't have the right vibe for Indiana... That's what I'm saying, like, maybe if you gave him a different script and you made Indiana Jones a different character, like, you gave him a different personality, that would be one thing. But with all the little quips and the way that he does things, like, it, Tom Selleck would not work in that
role.
Well,
and I think a lot of that might have been liberties that Harrison Ford took. Like,
that's
that
might
have been him kind of crafting it to his own, like, style of acting. I think it really would have been a very different movie if Tom Selleck had been in it. And I think Harrison Ford's definitely the better choice. Nobody on earth would say otherwise. But if Tom Selleck had been in it, I still think it would have been successful and there would have been a trilogy.
Oh, probably. Because Tom Selleck was big as well. Like, people like Tom Selleck, but he's just a very different actor.
And that's the thing. Like, George Lucas said he didn't want big name actors. You know, he wanted to make it his own. But he really established a good relationship with Harrison Ford, and they liked working with each other, and they knew what they were going to get out of the performance. And Harrison Ford really loved having that opportunity, especially after the success with Star Wars, because he's like, okay, you know, I finally have a foot in the door with a credible film. Now I can really try and go out there and get as many as I can. And, you know, I think his career flourished the most after Star Wars, and he really gets these big roles, and Indiana Jones is one of them. So,
well, he's the only one that really had a career that took off because of Star Wars. Mm-hmm. Like, Carrie Fisher wasn't in very much.
No.
Mark Hamill
more voice work.
He does voice work, yeah, which he's done, you know, like, some famous voice work, but he definitely doesn't have the same kind of, like, just nobody else got what Harrison Ford got out of Star Wars, like, which was an incredibly successful action career as, you know, somebody who was, and didn't always play the, like, quippy, you know, fun, like, kind of lighthearted type action stuff like Han Solo or Indiana Jones. Like, took some pretty serious, like, darker roles as well that had a lot more gravitas to them and did them well, but, you know, all because Star Wars really jump-started his career.
I think he owes a lot to George Lucas, and it started with American Graffiti. So...
Yeah.
We all owe a lot to George Lucas.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, at this point, you know, we might be like, well...
At this point, I owe, like, many, many hours, days, weeks of my life to George Lucas, so...
Yeah. I mean, we would appreciate it if he would stop making Star Wars movies, but...
Well, he's not. That's the thing. He hasn't touched his hand on Star Wars since he put away...
I would appreciate it if he hadn't
Revenge
sold
of the
it.
Sith.
I would appreciate it if he had just held on to it and just not done anything else with Star
Wars.
Well,
that's the thing. He wanted to prevent big corporations from getting their hands on his work and his idea.
Screw
and
that
then up. And then he sold it to the biggest one. All right,
let's not cry our big baby tears about Star Wars here. Okay?
Yeah, anyway. We can't. That's like an 8-part podcast.
So is there anything in this beautiful god of a movie that's not, that isn't good?
No, in all honesty, I think, like you said, almost each and every scene is memorable. Like, and I was going to discuss that. I am going to present on this movie for my history of film class and just how...
You're just using this up every
week. No, I already... I just... I love that... Yeah, I picked this right from the get-go when I knew I was going to do the 1980s, so I've been planning this for 2 months. But how almost the whole film is just constantly... You're on the edge of your seat. It's suspenseful. And it's weird because I grew up with this film, so I honestly don't remember the first time I viewed it. But, you know.
It's a very efficient movie, is what I would say. Like, you know,
it's efficient without feeling rushed. That's
what I was going to say. Like, you were talking about every scene is memorable and every, you know, there isn't a part where you feel like, oh, I'm going to get up and go do something or check my phone or whatever. And that is because it's very efficient. And it does it really well of making sure that, like, the audience is incredibly engaged the entire time, but you don't feel like they're just rushing towards the end, like, okay, we got to get through this, like, or that they're skipping important pieces or that they leave holes in the plot line for you. Like, everything's covered, everything's addressed, it's done well, but you're engaged and you're enjoying it the whole time, and it doesn't feel like you are sitting through something you don't want to sit through or that you're being dragged, you know, too quickly through something either. So, it's impressive, definitely.
No, I agree. I mean, I think there's little things, and I don't understand why there are little things. Like, there are things like in the beginning of the movie where you have the indigenous people, you know, whatever race they are, I'm not sure. And you have them, like, when they're chasing Indiana Jones and they're, like, firing their bows at him, and it's just, like, the worst possible, like, it's so bad. They're like just like spiraling like way up,
yeah,
and they're like flying straight up. It's like, what?
I know what you're talking about.
Aren't they trying to, like, these people grew up in the forest, they've been using bows their entire lives, and
yeah,
now
how,
it comes
how
down
do they
to
survive?
It when they have to test, they're just like, yeah.
Well, it
know.
Becomes it's the invincibility of Indiana Jones.
That's what it really is.
I mean, it is funny because one guy ends up, like, he gets a low angle and he just,
yeah,
like shoots the
and
arrow
and
it goes
like 15 feet in front of him. I mean, I just don't, and it just makes me wonder, like, why is that in this movie? Why in older movies is it so hard for them to do realistic, like, firing arrows at people? Why is that so hard? I don't understand. Maybe
I
they
mean,
just didn't feel like putting enough, so much time into that little
aspect
of the movie.
It could be
but.
That, like, a combination of it is in the opening to the movie where they're just introducing you to a character. Like, this tribe is not going to be an important part of the story after this. And the whole point of the tribe chasing him is so that you have some comedy as he's getting back to the plane. Where he's like, start the plane. And the guy's like, oh, I'm just fishing.
He's fishing.
And he's like, no, I'm getting chased by an army kind of thing. Like,
but still, I mean, like, put in, like, rubber arrows into their bows, not real arrows, and have them actually shoot at him.
I'm just saying, like,
they're probably not going to hit him, but have them actually have realistic, like, arrows and
I'm
actually
just saying,
shoot at him.
I wouldn't...
Not way up in the trees with the freaking monkeys.
I know.
Or whatever they're doing. I don't understand.
I don't know. I agree, like, it is silly, but I also don't notice it. Like, I now that you're mentioning it, I can think of it, but when I'm watching the movie, that doesn't bother me. Like, I'm enjoying it enough that I'm not noticing little things like that, and they're definitely, and if I do notice things like that, they're not enough that they stick with me to make me feel like the movie's worse.
That being
for
said,
it.
I give this movie a 10 out of 5. It's a masterpiece.
That's the first 10 out of 5 you've ever given.
My first ever 10 out of 5 masterpiece. How would you guys rate this movie? Unless there's anything else you guys wanted to touch on before we, or I guess you can get into that in your final thoughts.
I honestly feel like this movie rightfully earns a 10 out of 10. Like, I've never given a movie on here a 10 before, but I genuinely feel like you said, there might be some little things in there that could have been better, but really, at the end of the day, there's nothing that pops into my head. If I think about Indiana Jones, like, there's nothing that even asking for faults that I think... I love it except for this one thing. Like, there's nothing that comes to mind. Yeah. And so, truly, like I said, you know, it holds my attention the entire time. Every scene is memorable. It's fun. It's totally rewatchable. Mm-hmm. And I don't really have any issues with it in any way. So I would say it gets a 10 from me because it's a masterpiece. Yeah. Now, the other Indiana Jones movies, those would have more. But the first one by itself is a good, like, I don't have any
problems. Well, yeah, it's always hard to replicate, especially with how well done this film is.
Yeah.
To replicate the same formula. I would agree. I think it's a 10 out of 10. When I was discussing like the top three films, you know, this definitely came to mind, and someone was gonna do Back to the Future, and I was thinking, why not Indiana Jones? Because I was just asking, what would you think are the top three films of the 80s? And he's like, well, Star Wars Empire Strikes Back is definitely one of them. And then he went to Back to the Future, and I was thinking, what, you'd choose Back to the Future over Indiana Jones? And I can't list as many memorable scenes from the first Back to the Future as many as there are in
that should be a crime Indiana Jones. A
yeah.
Oh, don't worry. That person's been taken care of.
Yeah, he's been taken care of. By who? Top men.
By who?
Top
men.
Fat guy. Yeah.
Bureaucrats.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think. Did you rate it?
What, 10 out of 10.
Oh, you said 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10.
Yeah. Well, good job. Yeah, no, I mean, this right this yeah. movie is the epitome of, I mean, it's the penultimate or the ultimate. What's the difference? Is penultimate less than ultimate?
Hang on.
Because I thought penultimate check. Was like the same as ultimate, but now I'm saying.
I'm gonna, I know, I'm. Penultimate is the last but one. It's the second to last in a series.
Yeah.
Penultimate. So ultimate meaning it's like the an final.
Ultimatum.
Yeah. So like ultimate being like the final. So penultimate is the one before the final. So like in a book series, the second to last book would be the penultimate. So yeah, you're thinking about
too many words. This anyway. Is the ultimate ultimatum paramount non
pinnacle
one above the penultimate movie of the action adventure genre. I mean this movie defines the action adventure genre to me. It almost created it, really, or redefined it. I mean, the characters are just incredible. Indiana Jones is one of the greatest characters of all time, and anyone who grew up in the 80s, at least especially guys who grew up in the 80s, would 100% agree with that. I'm speaking for every male that grew up in the 80s.
As one who did not grow up in the 80s, one who barely made it into the 90s.
Well, I mean, come on, what are your other options? Like Nicolas Cage? So... But
I guess.
But I mean, and Marianne is like a great, great character. Kind of an unconventional female character, which is awesome. John Rhys Davies' character Sala is not very deep, not very three dimensional, but very memorable still. And I mean, mm-hmm. very, very lovable. John Rhys Davies in general is just lovable. And then you have the plot and the way that the story moves. I mean, it's nonstop, but it doesn't get overbearing, and there is not a part in this movie that gets old. Yep. So 10 out of 5 masterpiece. That's my penultimate review of this movie.
Well, in other news, should we mention coronavirus?
Yeah, I think we should. I think that's not a bad thing to, you know, if we're going to try and stay relevant, we probably should at least, you know.
Considering that's like the biggest thing that's happened so far in 2020.
I was thinking about that, and I was like, there's two ways this could go down. One way is that, if we talk about it, one way is that this podcast is like, we're talking about this before it blows up into this huge pandemic, and we're just talking about it like it's no big deal. Or it's something that 10 years from now, somebody will listen to this and be like, oh, yeah, coronavirus. Remember that? Yeah, good times.
I already kind of, that's kind of how I feel. Like, I know that there are people who feel like people like me are not taking it seriously enough because I'm not feeling like the world is coming to an end because of coronavirus. But just, I mean, listening to all of the medical professionals, none of them are freaking out about it.
Well, and like, there's no reason to.
Yeah.
There's really not. I mean,
so
if you look at the people that have died compared to the people that have survived, the numbers are drastically in favor of people that have survived. People who are dying are generally people who already have pre-existing conditions
and are over like the age of 70
and are generally pretty old. So yeah. I have a feeling that the majority, not the majority, well, definitely the majority, but not like everyone. A lot of the country is going to get this. I have a feeling all three of us will get it. It's already in Salem, so I don't know why we wouldn't. We probably all already have it right now. Honestly, yeah. We probably do. And we want, I mean,
Corona fives.
See, I don't.
It'll pass, and it's not. We're not. We might not even know we had it.
Yeah, that is kind of the thing. Is like it's. What I've been hearing is that definitely for people that are healthy, some people don't even realize that they have it. Especially because they don't want everybody who gets sick going into the doctor asking to get tested because they don't have the time or the resources to test everybody. Yeah, call in.
Don't go to the doctor and just waste their time.
But yeah, like it is one of those things that it's like, I don't even know that I think everybody will get it. Because really, it's not, as far as like we're talking about, you know, staying safe from it is no different than trying to stay safe from the flu. And I can't remember the last time I had the flu.
I don't know if I've ever had the flu.
I've had it once or twice, but it's been a really, really long time. Like I get colds sometimes. Like, you know, I usually get a cold every year. One that I'm like, you know, oh, I maybe need to take a day off work or something. But like actually sick, I mean, I don't remember the last time I had the flu. It's been years. And it's, as far as like preventing coronavirus, it's the same as what you would do to prevent getting the flu.
Or getting sick in general.
But I'm saying, like, you know, if you're saying, yeah, but I'm just saying, like, so maybe it's a little more contagious, but I, you know, it is also the thing where it's like, you still, if you're practicing good hygiene and you're washing your hands and you're not going places when you are sick or where you know people will be sick, then
it's not going to be the black plague to a
point. No, it's an overreaction in all honesty, because you hear virus and people start freaking out.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like so many things are viruses.
How many things? Professional soccer, professional hockey, professional basketball, professional baseball, you name it.
And Division One basketball. Yeah,
Division One baseball. I mean, they're about to, you know, cut the rope or pull the stand for, you know, pull the floor from under us and call our season quits about any moment. So,
yeah. And then
Trump just talked about possibly suspending domestic flights, like flying from
state
to state.
Okay, well, right now he currently flights to Europe and from Europe are banned because Italy is completely locked down. France is... Well, Italy is locked down because it's really bad there. I don't know if it's that bad in the Netherlands.
I don't know, but they're locked down.
Yeah, theirs is probably a preemptive. Italy is the second worst place outside of China because it originated in China. So, Italy is the second worst place is what they're saying outside of China. So they're completely locked down. Like I was talking to Ryan today, our cousin who is studying abroad in Germany, and they are having to now all of their classes are canceled and they have to get them home as soon as possible. And get them back to the States. But yeah, that's going to be an inconvenience if they cancel domestic flights, because if that doesn't come back soon, I'm going to not be able to make it to...
Like, if we want to go anywhere, like, we should buy tickets right now. I was thinking about, like, RTX next year. It'd be kind of fun to go to RTX. We could probably buy flights right now. I mean, because all flights are just dirt cheap right now. Dirt cheap.
They're not as cheap as I thought they'd be yet, though, because I was looking today because I need to buy a ticket to Jennifer's wedding.
Yeah.
And I've been, like, I was kind of waiting anyway, and then once coronavirus hit, I was like, I'll wait a little bit longer and see how the prices drop. And they haven't dropped as much as I thought they would yet.
I don't know. Somebody just posted something like,
it's got to get worse.
Flying to Disneyland from here is like $60 or something.
I don't know.
Well, Disneyland's close.
Disneyland's a lot closer than Houston. Disneyland's like an hour and a half. Houston is four and a half hours.
Yeah. Disneyland's closed. They closed the park because
that would be
yeah.
But I'm angry because I just booked a flight to Boise a few weeks ago. I wish I'd waited. Cost me almost $200. It probably would have cost me half that.
Because it's still like when I looked today, trying to book a flight on Alaska, it was still like to fly to Houston was still going to be like $260. So it's cheaper than usual. It's like $100 to $150 cheaper than when I checked back in December.
That's round trip.
But it's still not cheap. Like, you know, to the point where people would just be like, oh, yeah, I'll just buy plane tickets left and right. You know, like as somebody who doesn't have a ton of expendable income, then I don't know. I hope that they don't cancel domestic flights or suspend them, because that's going to make it really inconvenient. Also, I am kind of worried for them, for like, is Jennifer gonna have to like postpone her wedding because of that? Because that would be really unfortunate if that's the case.
On state to state, that is a huge nuisance. Just thinking businesses on how many people have to travel for their job just within the country.
Like, yeah,
there are so many economic consequences for, you know, because of this paranoia or hysteria that's going around.
I mean, thankfully we live in the age of Skype. So, you know, if it's just a matter of people travel to go to meetings, you can have Skype meetings or conference calls. But there are definitely people that have to travel for other reasons.
My aunt was talking about that. She's a nurse, and she was saying, like, she does not understand. She said there's been illnesses prior to this that have been way worse. And not as much as chaos ensuing from it. So.
Like I was saying to you today on my way home from work, I think it's just because it's new. And so people are like, oh, we haven't seen this one before. So obviously,
I think it's because
it's really
new
and
it's because we haven't had an outbreak like this
in 2 years.
Well, I mean, like this while social media was present. I mean,
that's not true.
Well, what was the outbreak 2 years ago? Not in the United States.
No, what I'm saying is, like, every couple of years, there's some there's something that goes through that's a big deal that everybody freaks out about, that the media freaks out about, that social media freaks
not
out.
Not like this.
Maybe not like this, but...
No, I think this is a very
this is definitely
blown out of proportion.
But, okay, so maybe social media is a part of the difference, but what I'm saying is, like, every couple of years, there's something that goes through, so this is not new.
I understand what you're saying in regard to that, like... There's always a new illness or new virus.
Well, and things that spread really quickly where they have to quickly try.
Okay, well then why
is
this one so blown out of proportion?
Honestly, fear. I think it's people just like being weird about, oh, well, it's new and we don't know what it is and so we're afraid of it. Because, I mean, if you remember, I don't know how well you remember, but like with like swine flu and stuff, people absolutely freaking out and thinking that it was... I mean, yes, that was years ago, so it was maybe before the same kind of social media prevalence that exists now, but it was the same kind of, like, everybody was freaking out about it and thought, like, oh, everybody's going to die, like, you have to be so careful, everybody's going to get swine flu, it's going to be the worst, and then, like, after a few weeks, nobody was talking about it anymore, and it kind of just and didn't end up being this, like, the kind of, you know, catastrophe that they thought it was going to be, which is kind of how I feel about coronavirus. Like, I don't think it's going to be a catastrophe. Like, should we be careful because there are lots of old people that we don't want to die from it? Yes. Like, you don't want to be inconsiderate, but, like, you know, the people holding up in their houses with, like, buying up all the toilet paper and the hand soap and...
I need my Cottonelle.
Like, it's...
No, people are definitely overreacting. Probably the most real thing I've seen come from social media about this is somebody was saying... after seeing how people are reacting about or overreacting about the coronavirus, I don't blame the government for not telling us about aliens.
Oh yeah, I saw that too.
Can you imagine just the mass hysteria if that was? I mean,
it will be really interesting, like a month and a half from now, to see kind of what the world looks like after we've kind of gotten through this, and like how that's going to change things for me.
I'm still saying it'd be kind of exciting. I don't want billions of people to die, but like, and this is why we should have watched 12 Monkeys, because this would have been a perfect ceremony. But like, it'd be kind of, I don't know, it's like exciting in that way.
They make films on this of, you know, an outbreak and it going worldwide and crazy, but.
I mean, this is an outbreak of something that's like a bad cold or a flu. Like,
obviously,
it's not like a zombie outbreak.
If it were
outbreak.
More severe.
But people are treating it like it is.
That's all that to say. Like, I'm just saying, it'll be interesting to see, like, a month and a half from now, 2 months. Like, it'll be interesting to see as Americans, like, did we overreact too much and it never became what we thought it was going to be?
Did we underreact
or were we right in, like, the way that we handled it of kind of preemptively shutting things down and canceling things? And
all right. Well, that's a wrap.
Yep. Adios.
Corona. Hard cut.
Doesn't